Pull up a chair, the stories begin. Patrick and Randy are letting you in. From the desert lights where the big names are, it's Big Conversations, Little Bar.
Welcome to Big Conversations, Little Bar, the Coachella Valley's favorite podcast, recorded live at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert. Get ready for another fascinating hour of meeting people who make the desert city such a spectacular place to be. Now, nestled in their corner booth perch, well lubricated and raring to chat, here's Patrick Evans and Randy Florence.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is the voice of Howard Hoffman, and we are back here at Skip Page's Little Bar, the coveted corner booth. My name is Patrick Evans, and I'm joined by the Kemosabe to my Tonto. See, I turned it around.
I screwed this up last week, so I'm just going to leave it alone.
I think my favorite is the Barney Rubble to my friend Flintstone.
That is a good one.
Randy Florence, my co-host extraordinaire.
Betty was hot. Wasn't she hot?
I thought both Betty and Wilmore, but Betty, yes.
Betty was hot.
Yeah, had kind of a little crush. Yeah. But I always, had a kind of a thing for redheads, so Wilma was
there, but...
Well, okay, well, we know where you go.
Yeah.
It's Betty.
Yeah. So there was plus Rubble. I mean, just hearing it. Could you imagine that? Betty Rubble.
All right. First of all, before we jump into everything, I need a Butters update. Your rescue dog, Butters. How is Butters?
Butters is doing amazing. We had a little issue a couple of days ago. We had a giant ant mound show up in the middle of our lawn. So it's been 2 days of trying to keep her away from that. She has not been happy with that. She doesn't like the heat, so I need some help from you. If you could cool it down a little bit and make it easier in the morning for the walks.
I am in the sales department of weather, not the management department.
So explain this. Do we need to worry that it's gotten this freaking hot in March?
Well, conversely, typically when we see a really hot spring, one really doesn't have much bearing on the other.
Okay.
But typically when we've seen a real burst of heat in the early spring, our summers tend to be more mild.
So Patrick's calling for a mild summer in 2026.
That is not at all what I said.
Did this sound like that to you, John?
Sort of.
So should we worry then?
Yes.
I mean, you're deflecting here and you're kind of vacillating.
So is this an El Nino or El Nina summer?
This is an El Nino year, yes.
So summer's still going to be hot?
Summer's always hot. It's the desert. Did you not get the brochure when you moved here?
No.
There's a welcome wagon. They hand you the thing. It says, by the way.
It burst into flames when I picked it up.
I went to Tucson last week and it was really hot over there too. And I had family visiting from the Pacific Northwest, and my cousins and uncles and aunts, they were shocked. And I said, what are you talking about? This is beautiful weather. I said, this is what, when we say this dry heat, this is it. It was comfortable.
Look, I mean, I think by the time this airs, it'll be long history, but. Last week was tough, especially we get to 108 on the very first day of spring. That's unusual. But today, we weren't even at 90 at noon. It's quite comfortable.
I've done weddings last two weekends.
By the way, this is airing tomorrow.
Perfect. That's great. Wedding, so by the time you hear this, all of that is still relevant.
That's right.
Of Big Conversation in the Little Bar. That's the voice of John McMillan, our producer, by the way.
Oh, hi, John.
This is what?
This and last week.
That's right. And by the way, the countdown is on. We are headed to the big 150, 150 podcasts. And people said it wouldn't last.
No, they hoped it wouldn't last.
That's right. They asked us to not. But we continued. Like, we've had a number of requests, but we're going to do the podcast anyway.
Yeah.
Bruce Fessier will be joining us, and he's going to be moderating our 150th episode. Kind of talking to each of us about some of the highlights over. I mean, we've been doing this for three years.
And Bruce begged. He begged me.
Well, Bruce likes to be on the podcast. Yeah. More than that, he likes to be mentioned on the podcast.
Constantly. Bruce, I think we've mentioned him enough on this episode. Bruce Fessier will be our guest in the future.
That's right.
But he's not today.
Not today. No, today we have a terrific guest and someone who I've had the pleasure of singing with. He's been with
Seriously?
Me. Yeah. Ooh. He's been on Eye on the Desert with me on several occasions. Ron Oliver, ladies and gentlemen.
Ron Oliver.
Not, and he's Ron is still mad at me for not getting him on
Eye on the Desert. He's not on Eye on the Desert.
He's never been on Eye on the Desert. Like, well, we had the two-headed cat last week. We just couldn't fit him in. Just have that cookie crumbles. No, Eric Frankson is our guest.
Hi, guys.
Eric is an extremely talented multi-instrument musician. One of the things that I admire about you most is your work with Well in the Desert, because you are extremely committed to the cause of helping homeless people in the valley.
I am.
And, I, you know, there are a lot of people who talk about doing stuff like this.
Yep.
You are where the rubber meets the road. You do it. And so thank we're you. Really glad to have you. Welcome.
Thank you. Well, thank you. I've enjoyed the first 5 minutes so far. I can't wait for the next.
Better. Yeah. Like, are these two idiots ever going to talk to me?
Oh, yeah. Now you want me to talk about homelessness. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Well, and then we'll talk about death and everything else. No, the truth is about, God, must be going on 5 years or so ago. In my neighborhood in Cat City, there was a homeless guy that was passed out in a field. And he was wearing nothing but just a pair of shorts and lying on a rag. And I walked up to him and see if he was alive, you know, and it was in the heat and he was alive. And he had been in a hole in the desert for like 3 days after being stung by a scorpion in his hand. And he just, and he had nothing, you know. And I looked at him, I said, it hit me. What's it going to take for you to go get happy? I mean, you're not happy lying here in the desert. What's it going to take for you to go get happy somewhere else? That's what I asked him. And he said, well, I don't have shoes. I flew home and grabbed a duffel bag and started cleaning out the old closet, you know, as he then went back and gave him the clothes that that he needed and his toiletries and whatever else I could grab. It was the first time I had done it. And about 30 minutes later, I went back and he was gone. Mm. He was gone. But, you know, but it taught me that there are ways to help people out, to help them up. And at that point I thought, you know what? I got to start helping. I got to do something locally. I've always called myself a localist. I'm a believer in thinking local. I buy local. I try to always put my money local. I try to go to resale stores instead of regular stores just so I can keep my money local and stuff. And I thought, well, what can I do to help doing this? And so I started passing out these care kits, right, with toothbrushes and medical. And each time you'd meet one of the people on the street, and this was a lot of meth heads, you know. And
yeah. Kind of one of the things I don't think it gets talked about a lot, but I mean, obviously a lot of these people suffering from some level of addiction.
A large percentage.
I mean, I saw a study that said it was roughly 70% of the homeless.
I absolutely believe that.
And that's a big number. But what I love about what you do is that you approach them where they are and you address their immediate need.
Yeah, you know, well, it's called triage.
Yeah.
is what we do.
Because it is immediate.
It is. Well, you know, it's, all right, so I get these bags and they keep getting bigger and bigger and they're costing more and more and I'm handing them out and they, you know, and I finally start getting into sleeping bags. So I'm handing out sleeping bags. I've handed out dozens of sleeping bags, finding out what people want. Oh, you need shoes. Started going through the thing. And then I find Well in the Desert. And they're every day during the week, they feed hundreds of the worst of the worst. I don't want to say worst, but
those who are in the worst shape.
No, that's the people of the street. I mean, a lot of these people have been on the street for 10, 15, 20 years in Palm Springs. So you learn what causes it. A lot of it is addiction, and a lot of it is just insanity. I mean, when it all starts, it starts with losing your job.
Yeah.
And then you lose your
car,
wife, or your house, and then you lose your wife, and then you lose your family. Now you're living out of your car, and now your car breaks. And now you are trying to live out of a broken car until they come and they find it. And then they take the car away and all your stuff inside it. And now you're really one of the guys on the streets. And that can happen within weeks.
Yeah.
Usually within weeks. And most of these guys were professionals. I know lawyers. I know doctors. I know guys that have come through, just fallen. You fall off the edge and you lose a child. You know, many of them that I know have lost children, and that is what the big trigger was, you know?
The catalyst for the downward spiral.
You know, sure. it's really a lot of pain, but I decided I was going to try to prove a point. I was fishing one day. I'm big into fishing.
You're big into fishing. I know this.
I love fishing. I love freshwater fishing. And I'm a bass guy, and I'm fishing one day, and I'm casting my lure out, and I see it hit the pond, and this ripple comes off the lure. And I see it touch the cattails, you know, where I'm passing, and they start rippling. And I thought, that's the way kindness is. That's the way kindness is. It starts with that pebble on the pond, and the ripple will, and anything that ripple touches ripples in turn. And now I don't know about kindness, but I know about physics enough to know that that's the truth. And so I started trying to prove that with helping others. And it ended up me going to, had to go into a feed one day at one of the five feeds they had. It was at one of the churches, and this guy's bike was covered with to-go bags. And he said, how many you got there? And he goes, about 20. And I said, you have 20? He goes, yeah, I give them to all the guys underneath the bridges, because for every one of us, there's someone guarding all of our stuff. So you're only seeing half of the problem, trust me. If you see anybody on the street, there's usually one or two where their stuff is at also. And I said, how do you stop? And he says, I don't. You know, he didn't have brakes. These guys sell off all their stuff. So the next, that night, I went home, got online and Facebook and got a trailer, a kid's trailer for him. And it bought him a kid's trailer for his bike.
Wow.
And he started delivering, he went up to 80 meals a day.
Wow.
80 meals a day.
He was doing like 20 before that, right?
12. Because, and very unsafe. Now, you know.
Right.
Then a couple other guys start coming up asking me for trailers. And one of them turned into a bike tech that I got to fix up all the other bikes. And then the word got out. Word got out that I'm giving away bikes to people that need bikes. And all of a sudden people started showing up wanting bikes. And just whenever there was a butt that needed a bike, all of a sudden there was a bike that needed a butt.
Where did you find the bikes?
People started hearing about it, my friends.
And they started giving you bikes?
Everybody has a bike in the garage, you know? Yeah. And I started realizing, holy cow, there must be tens of thousands of bikes that are just sitting as these people are walking on the streets and burning up their feet and their dogs with it. Just, it's awful and it's unconscionable. So needless to say, it started expanding out, and you don't know what, if you're going along with the flow of life, you know, and you're not trying to stop the flow, you're just going with it. This is what it drove me to. This is what it delivered me to, was delivering these bikes. And, about mid-30s, in the mid-30s of giving away bikes and trailers, I started engraving them with a number, WD, and then the number. And 37, then 80, then 100, and then we went up to 200 bikes. Today, I just delivered my 301st bike.
Wow.
That's amazing.
301 bikes. And let me tell you, every bike took tubes and took picking up and dropping off and lifting. I'm in the best shape I've ever been in, right? And people go, why are you in such good shape? And I go, bikes. They go, how far you ride? And I go, ride?
Right.
I just carry them. I don't. I've never ridden more than 30 yards on a bike. I swear to God, I can't even shift the damn things. But people give me the bikes. I find guys to fix them. And then the right people at the right time. And it's funny because I have, the way I do it is I scale the guy and the bike, because the bike is easy. 1 to 100. Twins come in at 70, 75, and then you get into the better bikes, you know, the Treks and all the way up. And then the person you have to look at and decide in 30 days, is that guy going to still own this bike? Now, after 300 bikes, I'm pretty good at guessing. And so it's like a little game. It's, well, all right, it's 50-50. He'll have it in 30 days. Then he's a 50. If he's sheltered, well, he just became a 70. Well, that's great. Got a job? Oh, you just came to 80 class. You just went up to Trex and you're almost at the Carbondales, you know. You get your act together.
About to get a really good bike.
I had a Pedego here pretty soon.
I give these guys better bikes than they would ever have.
Of course.
And what's funny about it is I always tell them, I said, when was the last time someone gave you a $600 bike? They go, never. I go, when do you think in the future someone's going to give you a $600 bike? Never. This is the moment. This is the inflection point where... You feel it. Don't you feel it? You know, you're going in the right direction. The lights change for you. And all of a sudden doors open up and everything. this is your moment. You got a bike to ride away from your problems. You can ride to work. You can do, this is it. Congratulations. You know, you shake their hand. Then it's up to them.
That's amazing.
Because they're people.
I really love what you took this on, but then you made it part of what you work with Well in the Desert, and I've worked with Well in the Desert. It's a great organization.
Thank you.
My pleasure. It is an organization that has faced headwinds.
Oh,
yeah. And I want to talk a little bit about that with you, because I know that there is a disconnect at times between Well in the Desert and the city.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to kind of dive into that a little bit with you. And I know that some of that was previous leadership, but you guys have been working on that problem for a couple of years now.
Yeah. We've had a change in attitude of how we were going to deal with homeless people. And everybody decided that it would be easier just to police it away than to take care of the initial problems that we could easily take care of. Instead of taking care of the, no, we're going to try to police it by pushing everybody out. Everybody left Palm Springs, were pushed into Cat City. Cat City, you know, is now dealing with the same kind of things that they were dealing with Palm Springs. It's not that we aren't trying desperately to make inroads, especially with the city and the county governments, because our organization is a 501(c) that serves warm meals. Our mission is to serve warm meals to those that are hunger challenged and give them the services that will allow them to survive. Clothing, bedding, all the bus passes, medical, all the showers. I can go on and on and on. Bikes.
But it's about survival.
And so what happens is, we were seen in some ways as sort of enabling a lot of the homelessness because we're feeding people.
Yeah, right.
And I hate to say it, because those people are all gone now. All the people that decided whatever their plan was going to be and all the animals, the people on their side are gone. The people on our side are gone. There's no one left on either side. We should all be getting along really well right now, because last year we served over 97,000 free meals.
Wow.
In Palm Springs without a single thank you from the city, not a single one. The year before that, it was above 81,000. The year before that, it was above 72,000. So you can see that every year we're adding 10,000 to 15,000 more homeless meals that have to be fed. And the people and they're not all homeless. We get families that just can't afford them. It's once a week. They don't have to spend $80 to take the family out to eat. They come out and, you know, everybody gets fed. And what happened was, in the last couple of years, under our new president, Matt Naylor, he has really, one thing he has really thrown our efforts into is improving the food quality. And it's almost been like a sociological test, because the food was marginal before. It was warm, but it was hot dogs and it was boiled chicken and a lot of boiled rice, because that's what we had and that's the way we were doing it.
It was inexpensive. You could feed a lot of people.
We spent the money and got a good cook. We got him a good assistant. And all of a sudden the food quality got better, and it's good. It's got, I eat it a couple times a week to just to check.
Just a check.
Just a check.
Just a quality control.
Yeah, with four or five of those quality control coffees I get, but
it's a QC problem. No, and you're solving it.
No, it's amazing how it changed everybody's attitude. We haven't had any fights. The guys don't fight amongst each other anymore. They don't. They're quieter coming through the door. Everybody's more respectful. I mean, it's just, it's an ongoing fight, and we are finally, after 2 years, coming out the other side of a real dark time for us, and we have finally gotten stronger than we've been in years. Years.
How do you define that? What makes you stronger now than you were?
More board members.
Okay.
A solid board.
Yeah.
More money in the bank account than we've had.
Okay.
We had our big benefit that just happened in January that you interviewed me about, the Wishing Well benefit. We renamed the Well and Jamming at the Well that they'd done for years and years. And it just slowly lost its, and finally the last couple of years, it just fizzled out like a balloon. And so I told the board I'd be glad to take on the responsibility of putting on
Well, it has always been a music-oriented event. I emceed the very first one years ago,
and that's what it became. But you know, it got just too big.
Yeah,
we got too big.
It was unmanageable.
Yeah,
even as someone who was like emceeing the event.
You'd have to get up on that big stage and walk all the way to the center of the stage, and then walk all the way off the stage. Guess what? This year, no stage.
Nice
little stage, 10-foot stage, no band, all tracks, and I now. I'm a live musician, right?
Yeah.
People can say what they want about tracks and da-da. Look, the people that I have are the best people in town, best singers in town were singing, and they professionally perform every night of the week with their tracks. So why not let them do their show? They loved it. They loved Tony Granberry.
Yeah.
Patrice Morris.
Mr. Wonderful.
Mr. Wonderful. Patrice Morris. They just knocked it out of the park. Patsy Cline. Lisa Lynn Morgan came as Patsy.
Yeah.
She's great. Frank Sinatra. Frank DeSalvo came
as Frank DeSalvo.
His wife was finally up on stage and they're high kicking. I mean, this was a hell of a... And yet everybody was so close. You could see the sweat. You know, you could see they're right 10 feet away from you, 12, 15 feet away from you. Everybody really enjoyed it.
No, I'm really glad you...
And it was a huge success.
Right. So,
as generous... people have been more generous this year than they've been in years. Years.
Well, for a long time, they did it with a house band. You had Chris Gore's band.
Yeah.
And but it was unwieldy, and it got more and more unwieldy. So I think your retooling of it, and because you have the expertise as a musician, working musician here in town, you were able to put a terrific event together.
You know what's funny? It brought back, it got my juices flowing.
Musically?
Producing concert-wise.
Yeah.
The last big concert I did was Rock the IPAC.
Yeah.
And I produced, me and Rick Jones produced what I'm proud to say if anybody can say different, come bring it on. I produced the largest indoor concert ever held in the Palm Springs. And this was, 12 years ago, 15 years ago? We had it at the IPAC Center. And we had, this was a response to not being able to get anything into Coachella Fest because you're local. So I decided, all right, I'm going to throw my own little local Coachella Fest. And it grew, and we ended up with 5 stages, 12 hours long inside there. We had 34 local bands, all local. And it was great. People from San Diego were calling. No, I'm sorry, just local. No. People from all over the country were calling, all of a sudden trying to get into my little stupid thing, you know. Then it's like, no, I'm sorry, are you local? Oh, no, this is only for locals. Thank you, though. You know, it was the best feeling to do. So we pulled that off. 34 local bands, 14 cabaret acts, including the Gay Men's Wind Ensemble, and I had a mariachi orchestra, all in 12 hours.
Wow, that's so cool.
5 stages. It just bounced, and we didn't spill a beer. We didn't even spill a damn beer. And you know what? That's what introduced me to everybody, including John Stanley King. He was one of our Hall of Fame acts.
Yeah.
But that introduced me to all the members of all the bands of town. And I had just started fiddling. You know, I'm a fiddle player.
I know.
As well as a piano player. And
you'll note that he does not say violin. He says fiddle.
Yes. Who play the fiddle call it the fiddle.
Yeah. Well, I'm the first I'm the first person in 380 years to come up with the definition, the true definition. And it is this, that when I am playing my violin and I'm reading music, whether it's scales or exercises or in the studio or with a symphony. I was with the Coachella Valley Symphony for a couple, 4 or 5 years. It's a violin, but it's when you stop reading music, it turns into the fiddle. Mm-hmm. Then I'm playing blues or rock.
Right.
Or
and you're
jazz,
improvising on
and,
that.
And, right. And it's all improv. It's just, it's a fiddle. And so that's it. When I'm not, if I'm not looking at music, I'm fiddling.
But your first instrument was the piano.
First instrument was violin.
Oh, was it?
As a kid. I studied violin starting 3rd grade in South Bend, Indiana.
Let's get there. Let's go back. Born in South Bend?
No.
I think he was there.
Chicago?
Born in Chicago. Born downtown Chicago.
1962.
Yep.
Right, Randy did our research and he's still
not born
in South Bend.
No, you know.
If you're in from Chicago, all I ever think about is South Bend.
Yeah.
Are you a Notre Dame fan?
I grew up with Notre Dame football. And then I wasn't smart enough to go to Notre Dame. So I went to, IU instead.
And congratulations on your national championship.
Oh my God.
Also a tremendous music department.
Yeah. One of the best music schools in the United States. So through high school, I was on full ride scholarship at Indiana University on violin. I studied with Chihiro and Machi and then Chihiro Kudo, both first and second violinists of the International String Quartet. And that got me to my senior year in high school. And then I was the captain of, I had helped start the soccer team, you know, so I'm not, you know, I'd started, you know, a lot of things, but started the soccer team and I had a girlfriend and I was learning how to shoot pool and I had a job and then Professor Kudo, right in the middle, and a great name, ironic name. I love names. Stopped me right in the middle of a lesson. He was a little guy, and he's still alive, I think, but he was a little guy, about 5'4", 5'5". And he looked up at me and he goes, Eric, he goes, for you, violin be world's greatest avocation. And so I went home and looked up avocation, and it meant hobby.
Hobbies.
It meant hobby, is exactly it. And so I dropped playing, dropped the scholarship. I went to IU, spent my first 2 years working my way through IU in a steel mill in northern Indiana, steel slitting plant in South Bend. And then the last 2 years, that was way too dangerous for a college boy like me. So the last 2 years ended up, I got a job. I was standing in front of a Lowry organ store in South Bend, Indiana. And I'm looking at this guy playing Spanish Eyes with two fingers, you know, and think, wow, anybody could do that. And this little woman saddled up next to me, and I find out she's the store manager, and she did a quick qualification to find out that I really wasn't the kind of guy that was going to be buying any kind of thing. But she said, you know, I'm looking for a part-timer. She says, I'll tell you what, I will give you a job here if you will promise me two things. One, you have to start teaching yourself how to play easy play organ so you can sell them. And two, you have to learn how to sell from my salesmen that are the best in the United States. And this is 1983. And she said, one of my salesmen makes over $70,000 a year. The other one makes over $60,000 a year. She said, I make over $125,000 a year. She said, we make a lot of money. She said, you can work your way through college doing this. Yeah. But you have to learn how to sell. So my dad was a professional salesman. I knew that was something I wanted to do.
What kind of sales did your dad
do? RV.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
RV. Right. And so, yeah, Elkhart, Indiana, ended up, you know, retiring out of selling RVs for, you know, in South Bend, Indiana.
Well, back in the day, you could write off your RV payment as a second mortgage.
Could you?
Wow.
We would take family vacations.
Wait, you can't anymore?
And I'm not sure. I honestly don't know. We haven't been
just in case I didn't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're listening,
yes,
if you're listening, I didn't do that.
No one works for the IRS.
Nobody
does. No one does. So basically, I got out of college. Lowry Organ was the largest reseller of organs in the United States, and they started sending me to locations. I started in Chicago, and then I ended up managing a store in Frederick, Maryland. And then that led to a couple others, and I ended up in D.C. And I got tired of the ship was sinking. You know, ship was sinking. Rats are jumping off. I'm jumping off of the rats, man. I'm telling you right there. I jumped right off of those rats. I ended up in D.C. I ended up with the largest piano dealer in the region and the second largest in the United States, a guy, Jordan Kitts Music.
Heard
and
of it? Yeah,
I was one of their young lion managers I managed five locations and worked 10 locations for them in just a short number of years, and that led to me becoming a Steinway guy. And my first Steinway was, I had John Steinway, the great grandson of the original John Steinway, helped me sell the piano to these people. But yeah, I became some people only know me as a piano salesman. Never heard me play the piano or a fiddle. That's a lot of people know me only as a salesman, which is weird. After I've been the piano man for 35 years, I started playing professionally in D.C. then.
Where'd you play? There are a couple of great piano bars.
Oh, guess where I got my first job. Ready for this? My first sing-along job. I got a job I was out at Reston, Virginia at the Sheridan out by Langley headquarters, yep. All spies.
Yeah.
And now all these years later, I'm looking back and thinking, holy cow, they were all spies.
All spies.
All of the waitresses all had accents from different countries. They're from Bulgaria and Hungary. And
they probably still have a dossier on you.
You know what? It wouldn't surprise. And it explains why they had me there. They had the most simple young guy that had no experience trying to play the piano, sitting there in the corner, not bothering anybody. Honest to God. And I dealt with important people, you know, D.C., if you're a piano man in D.C., you deal with a lot of important people. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had the World Bank guys in there when Reagan deregulated the banks. we had the five guys that were in charge of the world's money, basically, coming by every night and having their booze at the bar and became...
Sending you requests?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sitting there, there was no one else in the bar. I mean,
would you play Pennies from Heaven?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Me by Roger Miller.
Yeah. Boy, that's funny. Yeah.
King of the Road.
King of the Road. That's my go-to. That's yeah. Did you ever play, do you know the piano bar Mrs. Smith's?
So, yes, I respond to an ad in the Washington Post, and it says, help wanted, need piano, sing-along piano player, must be friendly. Call. I thought, I'm friendly. So I call the number, and it's Mr. Smith's of Georgetown, the friendliest bar in town. And it's a 100-year-old bar that has a piano bar in it. And so
it's one of the greatest piano bars. Years ago, I wanted to write a coffee table book on piano bars.
Yeah.
And that would be chapter one.
Oh, oh my God. It had, and you were playing on a spinet piano that was missing. All right. So I walk into this audition at two in the afternoon, and here's the old time owner of the place. I remember, you know, he's all right, piano's over here, and walk over, and here's this piano, and it's missing keys, and it's missing ivories, and it's I finally played that piano. When I got done playing that piano, it was missing seven notes, big important notes that, you
know, that's we kind of use these notes.
It explains why stride pianists had to learn how to stride. I had to do the same thing. You're covering as many notes as you can with your left hand because some are missing, some are hitting, but it blends together.
Explain what a stride pianist
does. A stride piano, your left hand is bouncing a basically a root and then a chord and a boom, bop, boom, bop. It's like Fats Waller or the Entertainer almost, where you're bouncing that left hand a lot.
Is it all chords? You're not...
Well, no, you're bouncing actually individual notes, and, okay. And you do a lot of octaves because one of them isn't going to be there. Because
you're skipping the
right.
keys that don't work.
And you do a lot of that. I would come home from Mr. Smith's at Georgetown, and my fingers would all have blood blisters underneath each nail. All
five nails. You're playing so hard?
Just how did I? Well, that and the booze. I mean, I was
you were drinking.
We were drinking and smoking. You could smoke in that bar till 4 a.m., and we did.
That's right. I missed a flight to come back to California. I was supposed to fly out of what is now Reagan International.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, I'm stuck in D.C. for the night. That's their worst thing. So, you know, first thing I do is find a place to stay. And I'm like, I got to go get dinner, and I want some entertainment. And I found
Mr. Smith's. Oh, my God.
Wow. And you
had to be in heaven.
I was there all night. I was there all night.
Did you start smoking?
I did not start smoking.
But you know, when you would walk,
but I did not also stop drinking.
when you walk into Mr. Smith's, it was like the long bar, you know, where you had the really long bar on one side, and then there would be just one set of tables going down the right side with mirrors. And then there on the very end would be the piano, this little spinet piano with this little rail where four people could sit. And then you'd get into the restaurant. And it had the smell of the old bar, the smoke and the beer on the floor, the sticky beer feel, you know, the varnish, you know, just everything about it was just
perfect.
And at night, Georgetown was such a party. It was just, you had government guys and college kids and rich people and poor people and homeless people and just all coming together and singing New York, New York at the top of their lungs. I'll tell you what, I had the best time, although I replaced a guy that was blind. David was famous there. He could sit there, and he was the best piano man. He'd sing all night long. Great voice, could do any song. And as he was singing, he'd shake people's hands and say who they were and tell them who they were. You know, he'd say, hey, John, how you doing? Oh, good. That was, you know, and go back to doing it.
Because he could hear him singing.
Could he feel him?
Wow.
He felt their hands.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So that's
and they
incredible.
Were kind enough to go, yeah, that's
yeah,
me.
Yeah. 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 Looking at each other, winking. All right. So
I'm Steve for tonight.
He's so loved at this place, right?
And you replace what?
I take the other 2 days, right? He's 5 days a week, and now I've grabbed the other 2 days. And the bar loves this guy so much that they buy him a seeing eye dog. So he can seeing eye dog. It costs thousands and thousands of dollars. And they bought him, everybody pitched in and bought him a seeing eye dog. And the first thing he did was go get a government job and quit the bar.
Wow.
Right. That's exactly what happened. And before he left on his like his last night, I asked him, I said, David, they want me to take over for you. I said, do you have any advice? And he goes, yeah. He goes, do you play American Pie. I go, no. He goes, good. He goes, don't learn it. He says, whatever you do, don't learn it. I go, you play it every night. He goes, I know. He says, I play it every night. It takes 10 minutes to play. You make a buck.
Trust me.
If you don't learn the damn song, you'll never have to sing it. I've never learned that song. And I've turned it down dozens of times. Let me tell you something. Yeah.
People love that song. And there was a piano bar in Virginia, in Roanoke, Virginia, where I used to live. And the girl I was dating at the time and I, we loved that song. And we would walk in and he would look up to us and he would be like, don't ask for American Pie. Because once you ask for it, everybody in the bar wants to.
Yeah, boy, that's the way
it
works.
Invariably, we'd stay long enough that we'd had a couple, and we finally, like, the last thing of that, we're like, American Pie! Yeah. And he would be so mad, but he'd have to. He would just have to do it.
You know, interesting aside, you know my partner, Bonnie.
Yes, of course. Gilgallon,
Bonnie G. Let's go back to Washington, D.C. Now, I'm playing at Mr. Smith's in Georgetown, and about 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, I'd always get up, walk out on the street, smoke a cigarette, and watch the street happening. And above Mr. Smith's and next door was a French restaurant called the Rochambeau. I think it was called the Rochambeau. But French restaurant, and they had the gabled, gated, upper, open gated window. And I'd sit there, and they always had the singer singing. They're singing for the French chanteuse, you know, and I'd sit there on the street and take it all in with all the chaos, you know. So 20 years later, I'm here in Washington, D.C. I get interviewed about different things I'm doing. I'm running for city council by Bonnie G on her radio show. And we, of course, we fell for each other and fell in love. We found out that person singing the was her.
Wow. You were working right downstairs from Bonnie.
I was listening to her sing.
Across the country.
I can remember.
It took you to move to California to get her to.
I remember sitting, getting ready for the Sheraton, putting on my tux and putting on trying to wrestle with my studs in my tux and watching the TV. I'd always watch the WTOP for the traffic because the traffic in D.C. sucked. And I have to drive the Beltway every single day to get out. I drive all the way out to Reston. And then I drive straight into Georgetown, you know, and then back up in northeast or northwest. So basically I was driving and I'd check out the show, and it was always this picture of this beautiful blonde. And it was the road report with Bonnie G. And I remember thinking, I can remember back then thinking, what would it take for a schlub like me from the fields of Indiana to ever wind up with a beautiful blonde, medium, beautiful star like that. You know, what would it take for 20 years?
It took 20 years.
That was the answer.
Took 20 years.
And
you guys have been married how long now?
Well, we've been together 15 years.
That's
15 years. In fact,
you guys are sort of neighbors of mine. I live in Cathedral City.
Yeah,
we're not very, very far apart.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. We were in La Quinta. I was in La Quinta. Oh, for 12 years, I lived in La Quinta. In fact, I even ran for city council.
Did you run it?
Really? Really? Yeah. Yeah. And that's where I first came up with my concept of potato politics, which is the idea that we're all small potatoes in God's eyes. But if you want to stop a pile of potatoes from rotting, what you do is you stop putting all the big potatoes on the little potatoes and take all the little potatoes and reprioritize them and put them on top of the pile and put the big pile. And that's why you should take care of your society too. You should take care of the weakest and the most needy should be put on top of the pile of priorities. And the big potatoes like the Walmarts and the whatevers should be supporting the weight. And that's
the mortgage bankers.
Now, see, I don't know much about politics, but I do know about potatoes. And I know that's the way you can save a pile of potatoes. And that was my whole shtick. I'd said I would base all my decisions on potato politics.
As you were growing up and moving into this music career and the selling pianos and stuff, had this part of you started to show itself yet, where you were looking at individuals that needed help?
I've always been a sort of an organizer. You know, I hate to say it, but it's true. I mean, like a high school, I was talking about soccer. We didn't have high school soccer, but because I was in the Youth Symphony, South Bend Youth Symphony, I knew guys from the other schools, and those guys, because they were playing strings like I were, soccer. We were into soccer. They weren't into football.
Right.
But we had just started a big soccer league in South Bend. And this was 1979, and 1980 was when we had our first two team. We had a team, got the uniforms. I got a coach.
That had to be pretty cool.
Oh, man. We were wearing a Riley outfits and stuff. And, you know, now it's been 40 plus years. They forgot about me. In fact, I even saw them talking about soccer in the high schools, and someone sent it to me, and they showed the coach I hired got all the credit. Got all the credit for really starting it at Riley. It was like,
clicks.
But I've always been,
what am I, chopped liver over here?
You know what? But you learn your lessons that way. And the idea is that you shouldn't be doing something for the acclaim that's going to come afterwards. You should be doing it for what needs to be done. And then if you're doing it for the right reasons, it's going to happen anyways. It's like doing this well in the desert stuff. It's 4 or 5 years, 6, 7 years ago, if you said, you're going to be sitting there dealing with meth addicts and starving people, and you're going to be volunteer. I don't know if I would have believed you. You know, but
I want to ask you a couple more questions about that. Where's your funding coming from?
Almost all private. We do get some large grants from some of the larger grant foundations, and we just got a beautiful grant from Indian Wells.
Because they don't allow any homeless.
The reason
they're allowed to drive through.
Tongue in cheek. Our good friends in Indian Wells.
Yeah, no, I'll tell you about the Indian Wells folks. They realized that Palm Springs wasn't giving us any money. And because they realized that, they boosted up their money. Mm. And they really helped us out this year. Right in the very beginning, the last couple of months, it really helped our coffers where, you know, it's been a real struggle. It's been a real struggle. And last year it was so close to being us just saying, we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
We're done. We're going to just get rid of it. Done. And we didn't. And the thing is, what I point out to folks, and I love pointing this out, is over the last 20 years, 25 years we've been doing it, but we have not missed a single meal. During the pandemic, at the height of the pandemic, when everything was crashing, we did not miss one single meal. 5 days a week, plus families receive boxes of food on Saturday. They have hundreds of families every Saturday from us. You know, and people don't talk about all the stuff we do, you know, or
I mean, I do think, I mean, like, I have worked with Well in the Desert out of New Orleans, who...
Yes, you know, Arlene Rosenthal.
Yeah. You know,
and she was our president for 20 years.
Yeah.
And then when she passed, it really left a hole, but... Luckily, she had the foresight to get people that were going to put together, hold the board together, and we built the board back up. We're strong. Our board's larger than it's been. It's stronger. We got great people on it. It's great potential. For the first time, we're excited.
Yeah, I wish the city would get more behind what you do, because
they will. You know what? When I talked to the board for the first time, they wanted to bring me on, and I said, "You guys are doing everything for the right reasons. And because of that, everything will happen the way it's supposed to. But you guys are doing, because you're doing it for the right reasons, it's going to work." I still believe that. And we're doing everything. It's not, you know, we're not trying to enable homelessness. We're trying to figure out the easiest ways to make sure that these people can go function and live.
But you're never going to live people
with some level of dignity.
Yeah. Right. But you're never going to lift people out of homelessness and when they're starving.
Correct. That's the first
step. When they don't have shoes.
First step to cleaning up is getting clean. Yeah. And you'd make
the showers is so important.
It's amazing. If you walk out of a shower, imagine if you haven't showered in 3 weeks and you're sitting in your clothes that are covered with your urine and you just, you're dirt. You feel like dirt.
Yeah, Patrick, Randy, I'm getting out of here if you guys ever do that.
Oh, I'm not saying I'm not sitting in the urine right now.
You're not showering for 3 weeks?
Yeah, well, I haven't had that much to drink.
I got worse news than that. Some of these guys don't even take their underwear off for 3 weeks. Because
they only have but one pair.
They only have one pair. That's right. Most of them get rid of it, and then they have less and less and less.
I know that there's
The one thing that we have is clothes. We I have Suncrest Country Club. This little plug for Suncrest Country, the club, the little club that no one knows about over on Country Club. They put
right out, before Palm Desert Greens. I have some good friends who live there for years.
They are the nicest folks. And a friend of mine, Billy, was there a couple of years ago, and he put out these bins with my name. And, you know, please help Eric fill up the bins for that. I go there every 2 weeks and fill up two big bins, fill up my van with clothes. They just, everybody drops, you know, someone dies, get all the clothes or getting rid of it, clothes, you know, and everything else. I mean, we get bedding and stuff like that, but I go there and pick it up. And I can take a van full of clothes and walk into the feed with these. And the pile is 4 feet high. I mean, I put in a 4 foot pile of clothes, and within 5 minutes, it will be gone.
Yeah.
The whole thing will be gone. I mean, it's just, you look at it and you think, God, I'm so lucky. I'm so lucky I can wash my underwear. I got clean underwear on.
You know, well, that's comforting.
You know, not right now.
Oh, not right now.
No.
Generally you do, but
no,
not today.
No.
I'd have to wear underwear for it to be clean.
That's right.
Also disturbing. You have volunteer kitchens where you provide these meals.
We have a kitchen that we have now, we pay for, that we're using as a satellite kitchen, and then we bring in to churches and to Oscars. And what we are, Monday and Tuesday, we're at the Methodist Church, and we set up
our, and they have a kitchen
food.
That
they have, well, they have a kitchen, but we already have all the food prepped. I mean, it's all ready, and we put out the line, and in fact, we supplied food for the Methodist Church for the last 10 years. I mean, they get our, from us, they, at least they used to. They have changed. They're actually doing great work. Those guys, I love the Methodist Church. They are trying to create tiny homes for these folks, and they've started becoming their own 501(c)(3), so they can do the feeding thing on, you know,
great.
Everybody help, you know, that's great help. And Monday, Tuesday, we're there. On Wednesdays, we're at Oscars, which is interesting. It's down, you know, at Oscars, and
it's right downtown.
Dan Gore was kind enough at the beginning of last year to step forward and let us use his kitchen when no one else would. And
at a time when he was having his own challenges.
Yeah, he's having a lot of stuff going on, and yet he was willing to have us help him and him help us. And in fact, he was my honoree for the Well in the Desert Wishing Well concert this year. He was the guy of the year.
We should also give him a shout out because he does live piano on, I think, Thursday and Friday nights.
Oh, yeah. They have a new piano bar guy there and everything, you know. Yeah. One night we'll have to go there and hang out. What do you think?
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love a piano bar.
Predict the song that might be sung.
Oh, I can already tell you which one's going to be sung.
So let me ask you, money obviously can be used. What else could anybody who wants to help
go to our brand new website? We had been corrupted 2 years ago after right when Arlene was passing on. Our website got corrupted, and we got locked out, and we never got back into our .org, wishingwell.org. So we went almost 2 years without a website, which is stupid. You know, you do your best. It takes a lot. This year we gave up, and about 6 months ago we decided we're going to go with the .com. So we are wishingwell. Wellinthedesert.com. And please go to that website and see our new website. We're real proud of it. It talks about all the stuff we're doing and all the meals we do. And we have PR releases and pictures and ways that you can volunteer. There's sites to volunteer. Also donation. That's where you can make cash donations. We are a 501(c).
But you also need things like clothes, socks.
That's right. And those things can be dropped off at the feeds. On Thursday, we're down at Our Lady of Solitude, which is a Catholic church just on the other side of Palm Canyon on Alejo. And then on Friday, we are at Our Lady of Guadalupe. And that's sort of the big, we have different ways. So CVRM, Coachella Valley Rescue Mission will come in with showers. There's another church group that comes on with showers. We have a lot of clothes. The San Bernardino Nurses Training, or it's a training program they have for their for wannabe nurses, and they come in once a week or twice a week, like they were there today, and they do medical screening. They wash the feet. They wash their feet.
There's nothing more personal for
human
beings.
They're washing the feet. Oh, and these guys, you have to understand, these are the feet that have seen nothing but a desert with 120-30 degree right, no, temperatures
on pavement, sand,
thorns, and sores, and just, and then add they haven't washed them in 3 months. You know, just these kids learn how to be humble. And I walk up, I say, you're the most damn Christian part of the I've ever seen. You know, you're washing feet. You're feeding. You're healing. You know, and yet it's all non-denominational,
right? Right.
And our organization is too. We don't nothing to do with religion. We only use the churches.
You use the churches, but that's a great partnership.
Yeah,
I think that's really important.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's not enough of it. We need more of it, not less. And that's what I think I'm going to be able to help with in the future.
Wellinthedesert.com. Wellinthedesert.com. I want everybody to go to that website because it's doing great work.
But as for playing, you can see me play. You know,
that's what I want to transition real quickly to this. There are two things I really want to get into. One, where you're playing, but I also want to talk about your road to recovery.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, you know, well, being a piano man that
you're
spent
working
a lot
in bars.
Of time at 4 o'clock in the morning and smoking, drinking. Guess what happens? You become an alcoholic. That's right. About 21 years ago, I was married. I was unhappy with. I hated my wife. I hated my family. I hated everything.
That could lead to some unhappiness.
You know what? I felt alone. I felt really, really alone. And I thought, the only thing that's going to make me more pissed off is, let me, you know, people say, yeah, well, you're drunk. You should quit drinking. So I'll show you. I'll take a day off and want to see what I'm like. Yeah, you know? I did. I took a day off. I made it. And then the words came back into my ears from that World Bank, the guy that ran the World Bank auditors, right? And this was years ago at that bar, and I'd walked in, and my first wife had caught me smoking cigarettes. And I said, I've quit cigarettes. That's it. I'm done. I've quit cigarettes. And this old guy looked at me, and he goes, look, you might have stopped, but you haven't quit. He says, not until you die. When you die, you'll have quit. He said, right now you've stopped. There's a good chance you're going to start. He said, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to tell you how I have learned how to quit things or stop things forever. He said, you got to beat the threes. If you can beat the threes, you can stop anything. I said, what are the threes? He says, for whatever reason, you always start something back up again, either 3 seconds later, 3 minutes later, 3 hours later, 3 days later, 3 weeks later, 3 months later, or 3 years later. It's like this ever-increasing spiral. He said, and for whatever reason, you get to one of those threes and the bottom falls out and all of a sudden you're drinking again or that. He said, if you reward yourself with a big reward, plan on bigger and bigger rewards, and you reward yourself for going past each one of those threes, he said, after 3 years, basically, you can stop anything. Mm. And I stopped drinking. And I stopped smoking cigarettes that way, too. And let me tell you something. You don't have to. It's almost your own little personal goals, you know. No one talks about the threes, but it's. I remember after 3 months, I went on a week vacation to the ocean. You know, after three days, I had bought myself a new bed. You know, I kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger for 3 years. I think I bought a car. Replaced my car. But you can. It is true. That's what I learned how to do.
That's very cool.
First of all, congratulations.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. It's been. I just had my 21st year of
that
not
is
drinking.
So great.
And anybody that knew me. I was in the family. I was the guy that everybody said, oh, Eric, you know.
Did anything change as a musician?
Oh, boy, did it change.
Talk about
You're
that.
You're talking about bored. I became the most boring guy. No. No.
Started playing a bunch of rock monitor.
Yeah, I started playing really just bedtime tunes.
Everything got slower. No, what happened was I realized that when I'm playing piano, that I would start by my third or fourth makers. I would start changing the way I was playing. I was playing sloppy, and what would happen is I'd start twinging in my arms or whatever because of the just repetitive stress. And I realized after I quit drinking that I could straighten up and go back to posture and basically it probably saved my piano playing because I wouldn't have been able to continue the way I was going. I used to have to wrap up. I would wrap up. After DC, I'd wrap up an octave. I'd measure an octave, and then it would be solid tape from here. I'd just sports wrap. Hey, rugby. You know,
there you go.
I played rugby at Indiana University for a couple of years.
Wow.
Three seasons of
Your fingers all still straight?
No. I quit. Listen, I was the world's worst rugby player. I sucked. I thought, oh, it's a lot like soccer.
They start pounding on you.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, I got so beat up. I came home one day, and I had cleat marks at the top of my forehead, in the middle of my forehead, on my cheeks, and on my chin.
Oh, my God.
I was sitting there right in the face, and I looked, I said, that's it. I'm done.
Can't do this anymore. So where can people come hear you?
I play a lot with Lisa Lynn and the Broken Hallelujahs.
We love Lisa Lynn. She's been a guest on this show. Yeah. We adore her.
She had her own good story to tell about sobriety.
Yep. She did.
Yeah. We support each other on that. She and I play actually across the street and a block down this way. At Cosuelas Cafe.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And we're there usually on Wednesdays.
Ray Rodriguez.
Saturdays. What a good guy.
He is such a good guy. There's another guy we should have on the podcast.
We've talked about that. We'll get him there.
He would be worth
it.
Do
a remote.
Only if Eric and Lisa are going to play.
Yeah.
I want live music.
So, right. A Wednesday night. Chili Colorado while I'm listening.
Wednesday night. Well, the only reason I really like that gig is because they got absolutely the best chunky guacamole in the entire valley. Period. It is there. They have the best guacamole. And because of that, I do the gig.
Good enough. All right, so you're there with her.
I've started playing.
I've seen you over at Babaloo.
Yeah, I'm not there anymore. Yeah. But where I am playing piano now, Friday nights at Palm Desert Greens.
Oh.
I'm playing for their fine dining. The guy from Cuisto. I used to be the pianist at Cuisto, right?
Yep.
Cuisto closes. Manager goes over to Palm Desert Greens.
Michael Scheimer.
I got a call. He said, they're really loud. He said, I need a piano. I need you on the piano. I said, okay. You know, then he said,
room, by the way. I had good friends who lived at PDG.
They're nice folks.
They're so nice. And it's, by the way, he doesn't drink anymore, but I do. And they have a great pour.
Hey, guess what? Their bartender came from Cuisto.
How long have you been in the desert?
This year is my, let's see, I came in 2001 after 9/11. I thought I was in Vegas at the time, and I thought, I don't want to be in Armageddon. I don't want to be in Sodom and Gomorrah. This is going to go down now. If it's going down, so I got a job.
So you went to Palm Springs?
I got offered a job working selling piano bars with Bill Shaw down here at Desert Piano, and he brought me in 25 years ago, and I spent 3 years with those guys selling pianos and that got my feet wet here in town. I have sing-along piano books that I used back in D.C. because I sucked, right? I didn't know anything. So I had my sing-along piano books. Well, I've been using them all these years. I finally updated it. And that's what I do. Once in a while, I get a gig where I can sit at a piano and put my books out and everybody's shit, but not very often.
What are some of the most requested songs?
Oh, number one,
American Pie,
Piano Man.
No, I have a top 10. It's interesting. 30 years ago, when I started doing this, a good professional, ex-professional said, learn the list they publish at a keyboard magazine every year from a Manhattan sing-along bar. And they take 12,000 requests and then they analyze it and they always come up with the top 10. And the top 10 are almost always the same. Number one, Phantom of the Opera. Two, Memory from Cats. Three, Send in the Clowns. Four, Somewhere My Love. Five, Wind Beneath My Wings. Six, the theme from Titanic. Seven, theme from Ghost. Eight, what's eight? Then you get into Misty, because everybody would say, play Misty for me. And New York, New York, and Piano Man. And those are your big requests. And let me tell you, you learn those 10.
You play all night.
Any job. You can do what I do for the rest of your life. It's amazing.
I don't know that I want to hear a whole bunch of people at a bar singing Phantom of the Opera.
Midnight, you know, alone in the moonlight.
I want to hear me singing it.
You want to stop a bar in its tracks if you do what I do?
Yeah.
You let an opera singer get up and do Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, there you go.
And by the time they're done, the bar's quiet. And everybody's sitting like this, you know, and it's like, oh shit, I got to start all over again.
But see, this is why I wanted to do my coffee table book of piano bars, because it is a culture unto itself. We're losing them, which is sad to me.
Well, but it's more of an East Coast thing. It's an East Coast thing.
There were some really good ones on the West Coast. There was the Villanova in Newport Beach. It was one of the greatest piano bars.
Oh man.
It was unbelievable.
I love that. So that, don't you miss those days?
I really miss those days.
You know what? We'll have to put one together.
Why don't you open a piano bar?
No, because my wife won't let me.
Yeah.
Oh, I can answer that question.
The only reason?
That is really basically the only reason.
Wow.
I would really love to open up. I mean, like a legit.
Yes. Yes.
Like an Eric Rankson
Yes. Where you walk in, like, remember Virginia, the Falls Church. And you'd walk into this one piano bar, and it was the sunken piano bar, and everybody, you'd look down, and there's people sitting down around the piano.
Oh, I want that.
You're vying for a seat at the piano. Like, when I went, and I went to Mr. Smith's on a number of occasions, but the first night I went in, it was jam-packed. Everybody was around the piano, standing too deep.
Yep. Four deep. Oh,
I went in kind of late. My flight was
a lot of them had fallen down.
I sat at kind of the end of that long bar, and I kept getting closer and closer and closer. And that's finally great. Around about 10:30, I got a seat at the piano. I'm like, I am not leaving until they tell me I have to.
And a week and a half later.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know what year that was.
What
I was there. Let's see. I played at Smith's in 1994, 95, mid 90s.
We very well may have been there.
It doesn't surprise me. We could have been with it. We could have bumped into each other. I went to the
Bonnie was upstairs and I was down there waiting for a seat at the bar.
Right, right. We went to the Helen Hayes Awards. We went to the same awards. We must have been in the same room. We must have bumped shoulders with each other.
That's,
you know,
so
I mean, all these different things that's so close, and yet I had to wait 20 years to come here.
But wow.
Yeah. Eric Frankson, our guest. Go see him when you can and support.
Facebook. You can Facebook me. I'm real transparent on that. I tell everybody where I'm at there. So.
And please make sure that you support Well in the Desert. Wellinthedesert.com. A lot of people talk about fighting homelessness. Well in the Desert is doing it one person at a time, one meal at a time, one pair of shoes at a time, one bike.
What bike at a time?
At a time.
That's
and I
right.
love that.
Thank you for that work.
No, I'm honored. I'm honored that you guys would even have me here.
Oh, you were a terrific guest. Are you kidding me?
Yep.
I wish every one of our guests was this fun.
I do too.
You know who we're talking about. All the guests who are listening that went on, you know who we're talking about. John McMullen, our producer. Thank you, sir. Always a great job. Randy, terrific. Our research department and the co-host. I mean, it's really the weight you carry.
I didn't have to do a lot of research.
But most importantly, Butter's dad.
Butter's dad.
I love it.
Yeah.
Butter's is such
Butter's.
A
Butter's.
Yeah.
We want to thank you guys for listening. We're looking really forward to our 150th episode. And you know who's really looking forward to it is Bruce Fessier.
Bruce Fessier.
Bruce cannot wait. So, and we hope that you enjoy listening.
He's going to send us a bill.
That's right.
I know Bruce. He's literally going, you mentioned me 9 times.
What do you mean he's going to send? No, we're going to send him a bill. This is promotion for Bruce.
Yeah, but that's not why Bruce worked.
That's well.
He wants to be paid for the use of his name.
Hey, look, I know that he thinks that the 40 plus years.
He should be paid for the use of his name.
The 40 plus years that he was at the Desert Sun gave him legitimacy, but it was big conversations, little bar. They put him on the map.
Look how many times he's wanted to be on.
Absolutely.
Because he knows what it's doing for him.
No, he's the reason, of course, that we wanted to invite him back to be the moderator. Eric, again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you to our listeners. Thank you to Skip Page and his team here at Little Bar. They are always very accommodating and lovely hosts. And Skip is a terrific guy. Subscribe so you never miss an episode of Big Conversations, Little Bar.
Big Conversations, Little Bar is a production of the Mutual Broadcasting System. This podcast is available in audio and video format. Visit our website at www.bigconversationslittlebar.com. New episodes are released every Monday.
Athletes and dreamers, stars of the screen, leaders and builders, and all in between. Little bar at Big Conversations, Little Bar.